You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kah. Hunter Green is getting us excited at the end of the year yet again. Ronald Acuña Jr. is nearing an unbelievable stat line. Corbin Carroll made rookie history, and the regular season is coming to an end, which means the fantasy season is also coming to an end. This, I think, is our penultimate podcast. We have one more after this one, I think we'll be doing to cover up the final week, as well as the MVPs of the fantasy season. Talk about players that we didn't talk about too much that maybe were unsung heroes. Just an overall recap of fantasy. But before we get into this episode, John, how's everything going with you?
Good. Been back from basically a week and a half long vacation from baseball and life in general. So, trying to catch up on some stuff in the fantasy baseball world. Obviously, I've been tracking my Twins at least because, you know, they've been in the playoff race and their magic number is down to one to clinching the AL Central. So that's fun for us. But it's been a while checking in on fantasy baseball. My home league playoffs finished basically 2 weeks ago, and didn't make the playoffs, or, you know, didn't make the championship in any of my other leagues. So, it's been kind of a quiet couple of weeks for fantasy baseball for me, at least.
Yeah, I feel like when the end of the fantasy season comes for your league, you kind of just tune out, and I think everyone is just required to go on vacation after such a long season, right? Like, you have to take a little bit of a break.
Yeah, I think the one league that's still going on for me right now, it's TGFBI, and it's like, well, you know, like, some of the important players on my team are hurt, so there's not really much I can do to adjust my roster at this point. And making one fab bid is not going to make or break the season for me anymore in that league.
Yeah, I currently have all of my leagues going on right now. I have my home league, which I am in the championship, thankfully, fingers are crossed. I have a little bit of a lead right now, and I'm hoping it holds. It's a really weird fantasy week, too. There's going to be a bad weather storm this upcoming weekend with the northeast side of the world, and then there's also just everyone underperforming. There's a lot of mystery going on right now this week, but I have the lead in my home league, so I'm hoping that stands. It'll be my second time winning if I do end up winning, and I will be very happy about that. Then I have TGFBI like you, which I'm already out of fab money, so I really just have to set my lineup and hope for the best. And same with my other NFBC league, which is a big money league. I just have to set my lineup because I'm out of fab budget. So it's hard to manage all of that when you're out of fab money. When you're in the championship, you just have to make the moves and then cross your fingers, because that's all you can really do. It's all you can do. You just have to set it and forget it and hope for the best, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the nice thing about weekly leagues, but also maybe the little bit of the bane of weekly leagues, where, you know, you kind of realize, well, this is it. You know, it can feel a little fatalistic.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, that's why I personally enjoy daily leagues rather than weekly leagues, because you set your lineup, and that's also why I don't really like roto leagues that much. I do like roto. I love baseball in general, so just playing any sort of fantasy is fun, but roto, I'm not as into it, because you just set your lineup, and if it's a weekly league, you don't really do anything. You don't manage besides figuring out on Sunday who you want to spend your fab money on and then what your lineup is going to be. Because besides that, you can't do anything else. So,
right. You're like, oh, my team's down 30 strikeouts. There's nothing I can do to,
yeah,
you know,
cool. Like,
give me up.
Yeah, right. Exactly. There's nothing really that you can do to change it. So I do like daily leagues. I like head-to-head leagues just because it's more, I guess, competitive in the sense of you're always interested. So that's a whole different debate, head-to-head versus roto. But I'm excited because I could potentially win a championship. I could win some good money. I could place decent in TGFBI. So a lot of good things going on. I'm hoping that this weekend is kind to me. Cross your fingers for me. I hope all of you, if your leagues are still going, that you are also winning as well. But before we get into the rest of this episode, I'd like to remind all of you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter or X at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. If we helped you in the slightest. If we recommended a player, a streamer, if we told you about something that unlocked a different piece of information for you, let us know. We would love to hear from you. Email us, send us a tweet. Let us know that we helped you, because that's what we're doing it for. So hopefully we helped some of you out there. And lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, we're on all of them. So make sure that you subscribe to the podcast, and please leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Now, moving on to MLB news since the last podcast, we start with actually the same name as we started the last podcast, because it's the same player. Shohei Ohtani of the Angels underwent surgery on his right elbow on Tuesday. The surgery took place in Los Angeles, and it isn't quite clear what surgery he had. Ohtani's agent said that his procedure reinforced the healthy ligament in place while adding viable tissue for the longevity of the elbow. So ultimately an alternative to Tommy John surgery, I'm guessing. It's been confirmed that Ohtani plans to hit in 2024, but doesn't plan to pitch until 2025. And John, what do you think that does for the contract he's going to get? Do you think he's still going to get $500 million? Do you think there's going to be some sort of clause in there? We've talked about this before, but what do you think Ohtani has in his future in terms of a contract and what team he might land on? Do you have any bold prediction?
I mean, the smart money pick right now seems to be that Seattle's going to sign him.
Okay.
Just because, you know, he stays on the West Coast, and Seattle obviously is, you know, really big Japanese population, plus, you know, Ichiro being there. But I don't know. I still think ultimately he's going to get a deal in the $500 million range, especially since he's playing a pitch. I wouldn't be surprised if a team, like, you know, set up some sort of incentives in the deal where, you know, he makes more money if he pitches as opposed to just being a DH. There's some really interesting things there. I think it would be really fun if he stayed with the Angels, only because, you know, maybe they get a running back with Mike Trout and Shohei, but that organization is just managed so poorly that I'd rather see him go somewhere else.
It's really, really rough, because even the Angels came out and said, we're willing to trade Mike Trout if he wants to be traded. And that's a crazy statement to me. Like, They are clearly just tearing this down. They are not trying for anything. So I would doubt that Ohtani goes back to the Angels. My bold prediction, I have two. One's a homer pick, obviously, and the other one is what I likely think is going to happen. I think he's going to go to the Dodgers. I can just see it now. Yeah. Like, they're going to get rid of JD Martinez, most likely. He signed a one-year deal with the Dodgers, and it's up after this. He's 36 years old. He was a great DH for them, but they're going to have a DH availability there. So Ohtani can just DH the whole season next year. He loves Los Angeles. Then once he's able to pitch, then he pitches. So I think the Dodgers is a ridiculously good fit, but I think the outside source could be the Mets. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a Mets fan. I would love to see Ohtani on the Mets, but it's because we have money. We have lots and lots of money. So if Ohtani wants the most money and doesn't mind playing not in Los Angeles, then I think the Mets have to be in the discussion, because I think they are truthfully a team that could get him. But I also think that he's going to get somewhere in the range of 500, whether it's backloaded because the front loaded might not contain the pitching, or I'm not really sure how it's going to be structured, but I can see him getting 400 to 500 million with ease. Next, we have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. of the Blue Jays, who was scratched from Wednesday's game against the Yankees due to right knee soreness. He underwent an MRI, and the results aren't known at the time of recording this episode, but on Thursday against the Yankees, in the top of the ninth with the bases loaded, Vlad Jr. did pinch hit, so I think he's going to be okay, but definitely wait for the results of that MRI. Yusei Kikuchi of the Blue Jays was removed from his start against the Yankees in the sixth inning on Tuesday due to a left upper trap muscle cramp, which is his neck, if you don't know what the left upper trap is. He should be okay to make his next scheduled start on Sunday against the Rays, but keep an eye on his status. John, did you hear the reason why Kikuchi thinks he had a neck cramp?
No, I did not.
So it was reported that Kikuchi believes that this cramp was a result of only getting 11 hours of sleep instead of his normal 13 to 14 hours of sleep.
That's right. I do remember. I thought that was ridiculous.
What is that?
I can barely get seven. I know. Like, and like, somehow this man thinks that 11 is not enough.
That's just insane. He was upset that he didn't sleep half the day. He slept only 11 hours of the day. Like, that's unbelievable. But hey, man, if that's what you do to get in the routine for pitching, and I mean, there's worse things, right? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's crazy. So, Kikuchi, I really hope, because I did stream you for a 2-start week, I hope you make your start on Sunday, and I hope you got 16 hours of sleep before your start. I hope you slept for 24 hours and were able to be fully rested. So I hope that neck cramp goes away. But yeah, that was the strangest thing I read all week by far, that he was mad that he didn't get 13 to 14 hours of sleep. He only got 11. That's just bonkers. Next, we have Eduardo Rodriguez of the Tigers, who was removed from his start against the Dodgers in the fourth inning on Monday due to back spasms. He should be able to make his next start this weekend against the Athletics. Riley Green of the Tigers underwent Tommy John surgery on Wednesday, September 20th. The surgery was to repair his injured right elbow, which is his non-throwing elbow because Green bats and throws left-handed. He's expected to be ready for the start of next season. Tristan Casas of the Red Sox was placed on the 10-day IL on Saturday, September 16th, with right shoulder inflammation. According to Alex Speier of the Boston Globe, Casas is unlikely to be activated before the end of the season, so this was the end of his rookie season, 24 homers. Had a pretty successful year, but we could see him take another step if he's healthy next season. Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins is scheduled to make a rehab start on Thursday with AAA Jacksonville. If that outing goes smoothly, Alcantara can make it back for one final regular season start. It would most likely come against the Mets on the road and could be a big one as the Marlins try to sneak into the postseason. Alcantara has been out with a right UCL sprain. I believe he went 4 innings in his rehab start. I think he threw 50 pitches and he performed pretty well. So Sandy is on track to make it back to the bigs for one more start this season. Jake Berger of the Marlins left Wednesday's game against the Mets due to right quad tightness. He's considered day-to-day for now. Brandon Crawford of the Giants was placed on the 10-day IL on Thursday, September 21st, with a right hamstring strain. This could possibly end Crawford's journey with the Giants after playing 13 seasons with the team since he's a free agent at the end of the season. It's pretty crazy to think that Brandon Crawford is not the starting shortstop of the Giants next season. Do you think they sign him back on maybe like a one-year deal and try to send him off properly? Or do you think he's still got more in the tank and another team will scoop him up? What do you think about Brandon Crawford?
I think it makes sense for the Giants to sign him to a one-year deal.
Yeah.
They do have some young guys coming up in the farm system, but no one that's like immediately ready to slot into that shortstop position. And I could see him. I mean, I think he's also from the Bay Area. So, you know, for him, the idea of like maybe moving somewhere else just to play one more year, if the Giants are offering, you know, a one-year contract to him, I think he'd probably rather stay in San Francisco than move somewhere else.
I agree with that. I don't know how old Brandon Crawford is, but I think the Giants should give him like a really small contract. I'm sure he would sign it if he wanted to just finish out his career with the Giants. Mm-hmm. Right. So I could see them doing that and him just being a backup shortstop or being some part of the system in some sort of way. So I think Crawford on the Giants is just the right fit, but I could see him going elsewhere. It depends how much he has left in the tank. So We'll see about Brandon Crawford this upcoming season. Joe Musgrove of the Padres will not pitch again in 2023. He's officially been shut down for the season. Ha-Seong Kim of the Padres has missed 4 straight games due to abdominal soreness. He's considered day-to-day for now. Salvador Perez of the Royals was placed on the 7-day concussion IL on Monday, September 18th. Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals was sent for an MRI on his injured left wrist. He's been bothered by wrist discomfort for a while and felt acute pain on a swing during Wednesday's game. Wilson Contreras could be shut down early due to this issue and the Cardinals being eliminated from the postseason. Royce Lewis of the Twins will have an MRI when the Twins return home for the weekend series against the Angels. He left Tuesday's game early due to hamstring tightness. Depending on what the MRI says, this could be the end of regular season play for Lewis, who had an unbelievable September. I mean, I was facing him in the semifinals of my home league, and it was not fun. He had 3 homers, 9 RBI. He was an animal. So thank God Royce Lewis is not facing me anymore, and I hope that he's okay and can play for your Twins in the postseason. Another person from the Twins, Carlos Correa, was placed on the 10-day IL on Wednesday, September 20th, due to plantar fasciitis. He's expected to return when first eligible on September 29th in Coors Field. But John, these 2 Twins injuries, I mean, I feel like Correa is always hurt. Buxton, someone that's frequently hurt. Royce Lewis is frequently hurt. What do you think about all of this for the Twins?
I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, of course.
But it comes at kind of an okay time. Like I mentioned, the magic number is one. There's still, 2 weeks left in the season. In terms of timing, it's not great, but Correa is probably going to be back by the time the playoffs start. Royce, if it's not a big injury issue, he could be back in time as well. But yeah, initially was like knock on wood, everyone's healthy. And then, just classic baseball. It's obviously not just the Twins. Everyone's really dealing with injuries and, the strain of a 162 game season. But it couldn't come at a worse time, I guess, for the Twins, but at least they have it didn't come like right before the playoffs. They still have some time to rest and recuperate before the real games start.
Yeah, that's the only positive I can think of, is that it happened right now as opposed to in 1 week, because in 1 week, then it's potentially danger for the postseason. But yep. Right now, if Royce Lewis is okay, he can potentially play. Carlos Correa seems to be coming back when first eligible. So I think the Twins will be okay. I'm rooting for them. Obviously, my Mets aren't in it, and you're a Twins fan. So, of course, I'm going to root for the team of my podcast co-host, and hopefully they do well. I mean, I really like the Diamondbacks. If they make the playoffs, I'm going to be rooting for them. I'm going to be rooting for the Twins. There's a lot of teams I like that are potentially going to be in the postseason. So it's going to be exciting for sure. Yeah. Christian Yelich of the Brewers has missed 6 straight games due to lingering back discomfort. Yelich has only played in 1 game since September 8th, which is just insane. The Brewers are refraining from placing him on the 10-day IL with only 10 games left in the regular season. Tanner Bibee of the Guardians was placed on the 15-day IL on Monday, September 18th, with right hip inflammation. Bibee suffered this injury during his most recent start against the Rangers and will be shut down for the rest of the season. He had an insanely impressive rookie showing, putting up an ERA of 2.98, a whip of 1.18, and having 141 strikeouts in 142 innings pitched. What a season for Tanner Bibee. What do you think, John, in terms of the rookie pitchers, who would you say moving forward is the go-to guy? Would you say out of these 3 guys, Tanner Bibee, Yuri Perez, and Bobby Miller, if you had to rank those 3 for next season, that is?
I think if I'm saying next season, I really like what Bobby Miller has shown.
Yeah.
I think out of the 3, Yuri Perez probably ends up as the best pitcher, but I think there's still some development in his game because, he's still only, 20 years old, I think?
Yeah, real young.
So he still has a long way to go in terms of maturing and getting to his, final form, so to speak. I think Bobby's just been incredibly steady this entire season, and he's also on a team of those 3 that is more likely to get a wins, right?
Right.
Like the Marlins are coming up. Like they look good this year. They have a winning record. It looks like the front office is actually like making the right moves. So they could become a force in a couple of years. And Tanner Bibee, obviously he doesn't have the best stuff. That's Yuri Perez, but he has really good stuff. And I think, in terms of this Cleveland team, like they're going to continue developing him, obviously. That's what they're good at. And he's going to be, I think he's going to be a really good pitcher for, the next 5 years. But I think if I'm drafting a guy next year, I think I still ultimately will go with Bobby just because he has the advantage of wins while also providing, similar stats, right, with ERA, whip, and strikeouts.
So for you, if you had to rank him, it would be Bobby, Yuri, Tanner?
Yeah, that's probably where I'm at. Right now, Yuri is just so electric that it's hard to put him 3rd on that list. Even if Bibee ends up probably getting Bibee, I wouldn't be surprised if Bibee has better numbers next year.
Right.
Like, Yuri is just, he could give you like a random 12 strikeout game, every 3 starts because he's just that good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I think it's tough because obviously, out of workloads, Bibee worked himself to 142 innings pitched in the majors. So that's really big. And I could see him going to 160, 180 next season. And that volume alone might make me want him more than the other guys. But if we're talking ceiling, obviously it's Yuri Perez. And if we're talking about a guy that can really just be an SP2, possible SP1, Bobby Miller is him. So it's hard to rank. But with my draft style, I think Tanner Bibee's going to go way later in the draft anyway. But if I had to rank them just pure upside-wise, I think I got to go Yuri, Bobby, Tanner. It's just so hard. I mean, you could coin flip Jury and Bobby. I think Bobby's going to have more innings than Jury next season. I think Tanner's going to have more innings than both of them. So they're all really good. They're all really good.
The main thing is that Cleveland is going to lean on Bobby a lot more than the other two teams are going to lean on their guys. Because, and I mean, it is kind of weird with the whole Dodgers situation right now with their pitching staff, with, you know, who knows if Julio Urias is ever going to pitch in the majors again.
Right.
Won't. But they do get Walker Buehler back next year.
Yep.
And the Dodgers being the Dodgers, they're going to probably find someone in free agency to kind of take a spot. And so Bobby is looking to be, what, maybe the number four, number five guy in LA. And he could easily be sent down if they're like, yeah, we think you need a little bit more, you know, seasoning or things like that. I don't think they necessarily will, but he hasn't exactly had a ton of experience in the majors either. So, or just in professional baseball in general. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they decide, hey, we think you need a few more games in AAA, and they send him down. And, you know, that's where Tanner Bibee gets the edge of being a consistent guy on the major league team throughout the entire season.
And what's crazy, too, is the Dodgers are kind of loaded at pitching. Like, low-key, Ryan Pepio, Emmett Sheehan. Like, they have a lot of people. They have Shelby Miller, who's, like, a long reliever right now. So they have a lot of guys for that rotation. And obviously, Clayton Kershaw, we don't know what he's going to do, if he's going to be a Dodger or what's going to happen there. Julio Urias, like you said, a bunch of question marks. So the staff is going to be interesting, but I think Bobby Miller is going to be a main focal point of that staff with Walker Buehler. So, yeah, without a doubt, I think all three of those guys are impressive, and it's going to be exciting to watch them next season and see where they go in the draft. And then speaking of Guardians, on a positive note, obviously they lost Tanner Bibee for the rest of the season, but Shane Bieber of the Guardians will be activated from the 60-day IL and start Friday's game against the Orioles. He will be limited to only 80 pitches, but it's nice to see Bieber off of the IL and back on the mound. Bieber has been out with right elbow inflammation and is an upcoming free agent. So, John, before we move on, any last remarks on these notes?
Just make sure you're up to date on who's injured on your team and be able to, you know, pivot as soon as possible. It just sucks to, you know, for example, a guy like Salvi, right? It's hard to replace a catcher like him, but you know, as soon as he gets on IL, you gotta have a backup plan for how you're gonna replace him. And so, yeah, that's kind of the reality of playoffs, is things just matter more, I guess. But there's also more availability on the waiver wire, and it's okay to pick up a guy for like a stream, because who cares? It's the season's gonna end next week.
Right. Yeah, no, without a doubt. And what's crazy too is that there's only 9-10 games left by the time you're listening to this podcast, and it's a race for a lot of these teams. I mean, the Mariners, the Rangers, the Cubs, the Diamondbacks, they're all in this heated race for the playoffs. So for roto leagues, there's a lot to be done. So if you are still in it, make sure you're paying attention. Make sure you're replacing your injured guys. Obviously, the replacements are probably thin and the injuries hurt not as much as they did a few weeks ago, but just make sure your team is ready and you're putting the best product on the field. And then also, before we move on, as we're recording this, I just got news that the Rays are calling up top prospect Junior Caminero. So that's an interesting call-up, because he is 20 years old, and between high A and double A, he was batting .324, .384, .591 with 31 homers and 94 RBIs. So he might be someone that you keep an eye on and maybe pick up in those keeper leagues and dynasty leagues if he's not already owned, which I'm sure he is. But in a redraft league, hey, maybe you grab him if you need a shortstop or third baseman. Junior Caminero just got called up by the Rays. But that wraps up the news from this week. Before we move on to the weekly performance recap, we are going to take a quick break, so stay tuned. All right, we are back, and it's time for the weekly performance recap. Just a reminder, we get most of our hitter and pitcher highlights from the daily articles on the Pitcher List website. The hitter recap and SP roundup articles are incredible resources to read through to see how players performed each day. But, John, let us know who did well from this weekend.
Yeah, shout out to Ryan Amari, Kevin O'Brien, and Brett Ford for their hitter recap articles over the weekend. Starting on Friday, Luis Arraez of the Miami Marlins, 2-for-5 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 2 RBIs. That's obviously not a line that you see from Arraez that often. He was facing Bryce Elder in Atlanta and took Bryce Elder for a little ride with a homer, 363 feet to right field in his first at bat. And then in his second homer came off Pierce Johnson in the seventh inning, also 363 feet, ironically. So, you're not going to see this kind of power output out of Arias, like, ever. That was only his eighth and ninth homers of the season, and he currently has 10 on the season right now. So that's actually a career high for Arias. So, yeah, clearly not really a power bat. But, you know, what he lacks in power, he makes up in basically being able to put the ball in play anywhere on the field. And that's obviously leading to him sewing up the NL batting title. I believe he's, like, 15 points ahead of Ronald Acuña in that race right now. So he's clearly going to win that. I don't think there's any question that Acuña can catch up to him there. And then other, you know, in terms of fantasy prospects, like, obviously he's going to help you in the average, but he has a career high 69 RBI as well. So he's not like a complete nothing burger when it comes to counting stats. I was just looking at Pedrolas's top 10 list that we've been doing throughout the month of September, and Rise was listed as the second best second baseman. I don't know if I completely agree with that. I think that there's maybe a couple other guys who contribute more in other categories and are more well-rounded than Arias, but he's clearly having a great season this year. And you have to give him props for how much he's helped this Miami team kind of stay afloat with their lack of offense. And now they're challenging for a playoff spot, which is cool to see. Gunnar Henderson of the Baltimore Orioles, they're also in a tight race for the AL East crown. He went 3-for-5 with a homer, 2 runs, and 3 RBI on Saturday. This was an 8-0 win over the Rays, so really important for them and being able to maintain their AL East lead, I guess you could say, being first at least in that division. Gunnar Henderson, I think most people are penciling him in as the AL Rookie of the Year award. Obviously, Josh Jung is another front runner in that competition, but it's kind of been a quiet season for Henderson. I mean, he's made some pretty amazing throws defensively speaking, but I think a lot of his offense is kind of hidden by the fact that, oh, hey, he's also on the same team as Adley Rutschman, and like this Orioles team in as a whole is doing really well. They also just called up Heston Kjerstad, who's like one of their top rookies as well. Yeah, Gunnar Henderson maybe a little overshadowed on his own team, but yeah, he's having a heck of a year, hitting 260 with an 828 OPS. He has 27 homers on the season. So yeah, just a great, great overall season from him. And I mean, we've talked ad nauseum about how, you know, he was pretty garbage over the first 50 games, but he's really turned it around and helped this Orioles team to, you know, potentially their first AL East title in a bit for the fans of Baltimore. And then finally, wrapping up on Sunday, Jake Berger, who we mentioned a little bit earlier in the news and notes, he went 2-for-5 with a double, a homer, a run, 3 RBI, and a walk, also against Atlanta. And yeah, he's been doing really well, really, really well this season, 33 homers total. Since being traded to the Marlins from the White Sox, maybe it's getting out of that dysfunctional clubhouse, but he's been doing really well in Miami, providing some offense for them. 8 homers with Miami. He's batting .308 and he has 24 RBI. So, you know, for a team that basically struggled at getting runs, he's been invaluable for Miami to kind of get that offense going. And yeah, they're currently half a game, I believe, behind the Cubs for the final and a wild card spot. So they're still very much in the mix of it, and they're going to need guys like Arias and Berger to be at their best in order to hopefully earn a playoff berth for the first time in a while.
It's really crazy that Luis Arias, in the beginning of the season, we were like, oh, he's going to hit 400. He could hit 400. And obviously that's come down a bit, but he is such a good batting average contributor. He's obviously the best in the game for batting average. Mm-hmm. But for fantasy, yep, it's just so weird because he's literally a two-category player. He's batting average and runs. RBI are non-existent. Stolen bases rarely happen. Homers, he's got 10, which, like you said, is a career high, which is just kind of insane. So for fantasy purposes, it stinks that Luis Arias isn't a great option. I mean, he's really good in points leagues and stuff like that, but it's so hard to just have him rostered on your team because he's such a drought in all the other categories. So unless you need a big boon to batting average, Arias is not the guy you need, but it is impressive to see what he's doing, and it's awesome to see someone who just makes good contact and gets hits, because you don't see that too often in this game. So it's cool to see that he has over 200 hits this season already, and he's still trucking. And like you said, with the Marlins, Jake Berger's also playing fantastic. Ever since he was acquired by the White Sox, he went from batting like 220 to 300. So whatever they did there, whether it's just more consistent playing time or just getting the heck out of Chicago with the White Sox, I mean, I don't know what it was, but Berger seems to be in a good place, and he's a great fit in Miami. I mean, him and Josh Bell, just phenomenal. They've been doing really, really well as Miami Marlins. And then Gunnar Henderson, like you said, we were talking about, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months ago, where he was a droppable player, and now he's helping them lead to a potential AL East title. So really cool to see Gunnar Henderson get back on track, because you never want to see these rookie guys come up on the scene, be incredible, and then just fall off a cliff. So really cool that Gunnar Henderson turned his season around.
Yeah, and he's going to have to enjoy some postseason play too, which is going to be exciting for
him. Yeah, really exciting. The Orioles are an exciting team to root for right now.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Moving on to pitchers then, talking about another former White Sox player, Lucas Giolito, who is currently on the Guardians, was up against Texas. And naturally, against one of the better offenses in the majors, he went 7 innings with 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 12 strikeouts. For some reason, found the mojo and kind of wrecked the Rangers, which is cool. He currently has Cincinnati left on his schedule. I think he played Kansas City. He pitched against Kansas City today.
His start was on Wednesday. And
Wednesday, that's right.
He went 5.1 with 3 earned runs and a good amount of strikeouts. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, not like the best start you want to see against a team like Kansas City, but, you know, at least it wasn't like he gave up 7 runs. But, yeah, he has Cincinnati left on the schedule. So, yeah, it's worth holding on to him for another week, or maybe seeing if someone had rage drop Giolito in your league and maybe pick him up for that start. Fastball is down in velocity, so you don't love that, but you know, end of the season, fatigue sets in. He was still good enough to generate 12 strikeouts against Texas, so pretty solid there. On Saturday, Sawyer Gibson Long of the Detroit Tigers went 5 innings with 1 in run, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 11 strikeouts. It feels like Gibson Long is like the hottest name among like prospect pitcher guys a little bit right now. Obviously, there's been a ton of great rookie pitchers. We just, you know, spent a long time talking about three of the top rookies. But yeah, Gibson Long, I guess, got a lot of hype with him. Obviously, pitching a game with 11 strikeouts helps out a ton. He had a 45% CSW on the night, and I think only one of his 4 pitches was below that 45% mark. Everything else was like ridiculously high. He was getting whiffs galore against the Angels, which, of course, I mean, essentially, they're not even a quad A team. They're pretty much a triple A team at this point. So not that difficult, but still pretty impressive from Gibson Long. And he finishes the season facing Oakland and Kansas City. So just a really solid streamer. If you need a guy to plug in, he should be available in your league still. His numbers, I think, were just mid 20s in Yahoo and then, you know, below 10% on ESPN. So yeah, he should be available. And then moving on to Sunday, Carlos Rodon of the Yankees, 6.2 innings, 3 in runs, 6 hits, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. It's probably a little bit of too little too late for Rodon. Obviously, he came back a little bit. He came back and then got injured again, but, you know, and then finally is back now. Had a really great previous start to this start, and then this one was pretty solid as well. He has Arizona and Kansas City to finish out the season. So, you know, both of those matchups should work in his favor. I think the real question is, how does he finish out the season and how does that translate ultimately to next year's success? I think there'll be a little bit discount for him in fantasy drafts just because, you know, the injury risk is always going to be there for Rodon. But he might be a guy to pick up in that kind of SP3, SP4 range in drafts and end up pitching like a SP2. You know, that's definitely the possibility here with Rodon. And we'll see how these final few starts go this season. And, you know, hopefully there's no other lingering health issues for Rodon and he can come back next year as, you know, a Cy Young caliber pitcher.
Yeah, with Rodon, exactly what you said. I think he's going to be a great value going into drafts next season. I think that he's going to go somewhere in the 8 to 12 round range, depending on what kind of league size you're in. So I could see him going in like 10 to 12 team leagues, going in like the 10 to 12 range round-wise. And I could see him in like 14 team, 15 team leagues, going in the 8th round, somewhere around there. So I think he'll be mainly drafted on name value and hopeful upside, but he's someone you have to be super cautious with because of that injury history, of course. So he's a big risk, high reward kind of guy. So if you're in the market for that kind of pitcher, I would gamble on him for where he's probably going to go in drafts. If he's going in the first 6 rounds just based off name value alone, then I'm good. I don't want any piece of him. But in those later rounds, that's where I would look to snatch up Carlos Rodon. And yet Sawyer Gibson Long kind of came out of nowhere. Looks kind of like Logan Webb, according to Nick, and he's pretty much right. I mean, he did a whole pitch breakdown of Sawyer Gibson Long from his MLB debut on YouTube, so go and check that out on the Pitcher List YouTube page. But Sawyer Gibson Long looks really good. He's a taller guy that throws a really, really nasty changeup, and he used it to his advantage against the Angels. I mean, 11 Ks and 23 whiffs. I mean, those are serious numbers for 5 innings pitched. So Sawyer Gibson Long looks really good. He starts against the A's on Friday. So by the time you're listening to this, he already started against the A's. I'm kind of torn if I should stream in my home league, and basically because I only have one pickup left and I might want to hold that till Sunday just in case I don't need to stream someone and maybe I want to do something else with it. But man, it's tempting to grab Sawyer Gibson Long because the A's are bad and he's been good. So I'm very tempted, and that might be foreshadowing as well for a future bit of advice. And then Lucas Giolito, yeah, like you said, he pitched against the Royals and didn't have the greatest result, but didn't get shelled, so that's always good. And he had a great start in Texas with 12 strikeouts. The start before that had a lot of strikeouts and was pretty good. So Giolito seems to have found his footing a little bit, but as I mentioned before, he's going through a lot this season. 3 different teams, a divorce, so much going on in his head that pitching is kind of hard to do when you're under that much stress. So give Giolito a little bit of a break. I'll be excited to draft him next season. Moving on to Monday, September 18th, from the Daily Hitting Recap article by Andrew Abramo, we start with J.D. Martinez of the Dodgers, who went 3-for-5 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 5 RBI. J.D. has had a fantastic season and quite the bounce back in the power department. In 139 games last season, Martinez only hit 16 home runs for the Red Sox, which is what led him to sign a 1-year deal with the Dodgers, and man, has he came back to life in his age 36 season. For the year, JD has a .268, .323, .561 slash line with 29 homers, 92 RBI, and 56 runs. He's also near the top 5 percentile in hard hit percentage, barrel percentage, average exit velocity, and ex-slug. He also hit his 30th home run of the season on Thursday, so really cool to see that he hit 30 home runs again. And he's probably going to sign a new contract in the 2024 season because someone will want that production at DH. And I'm not sure if it's going to be with the Dodgers because, like I said, if they are opening the door for Ohtani, Ohtani has to DH, and then there would be no room for JD. But JD's going to get a job somewhere, and he might be worth drafting late in your drafts. I feel like JD Martinez is the now Nelson Cruz for fantasy, where towards the end of Nelson Cruz's career, he was a bank for 30 to 40 homers, even though he was like 112 years old. So I feel like he's going to go in the similar range of where Nelson Cruz used to go, in that 8, 9, 10 round range, maybe a little higher because 30 homers and 100 RBI is nothing to scoff at. So I could see JD Martinez having another good season next year. But once again, we saw the power fall off of a cliff. It could happen very abruptly and fast again. So we don't know about that, but JD Martinez, heck of a year. And then we have Kyle Schwarber of the Phillies, who went 1-for-4 with a home run, a run, 2 RBI, and a walk. Schwarber's homer in this game went 483 feet. It was over the Chop House in Atlanta and had Ryan Howard, who was in the stands watching that night, saying, wow, because it was just a moonshot. Schwarber has had quite possibly the weirdest season, kind of Joey Gallo-esque. His slash line is 197, yes, I said that right, a 197 batting average, .345 OBP and .475 slug, with 45 home runs, 99 RBI, 103 runs, and here's the kicker, John, 204 strikeouts, and 46 singles. He has 109 hits this season, with 45 homers, 46 singles, 17 doubles, and one triple. Just a weird season overall, but Schwarber has done the one thing that you want him to do, hit home runs.
Yeah, I mean, you look at those numbers, he is, depending on if you're in OBP league, he's a four-category guy.
Right.
If you're in average league, then he's a three-category guy. And yep. Honestly, such a minus in batting average that it's almost like 2.5 because of how much he drags your batting average.
Yeah, down. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I picked up Schwarber in one of my leagues this year because it was an OBP league, and I was like, he's not going to be that bad in OBP. And yeah, it's kind of impressive how bad his batting average is. But it doesn't matter because he hits homers, he gets RBIs, he gets runs. So I just wish that maybe the Phillies wouldn't have him still bat leadoff, but Phillies are going to Philly. And I've argued countless times in my head with other managers.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you batting this guy, six? Or why are you batting this guy first? It's just like, whatever, it is what it is. And Schwarber is again raking this season, and I think he should be just as valued as he was this season in next year's drafts.
Yeah, like you said, with Schwarber, why is he batting leadoff? The guy's batting 197, and I guess mainly you look at it and his OBP is 345, which is very good. It's a very good OBP. He's getting on base, but it's so weird to see a 197 batting average guy be your leadoff hitter, and that leadoff hitter has 45 home runs. So really strange. I think if he was batting second, third, or fourth, he would have like 130 RBI.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, kind of annoyed by it.
Yeah, that stinks. I mean, in an average league, it's really hard to rate Kyle Schwarber, but in an OBP league, in points leagues, he is a stud. I mean, he's a guy that you want on your team with 45 homers, 100 RBI, 100 runs, 350 OBP. I mean, he's a stud. But yeah, very strange that the Phillies keep batting him leadoff. I mean, you do have Trey Turner there if you don't remember.
And it's annoying because once he gets on base, it's not like Schwarber's like a threat to steal.
Right. So, right.
Why do you have a relatively slow dude who hits a lot of homers batting leadoff?
Relatively slow is an undersell too. I mean, he is not fast at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if Trey Turner can kind of get his act around, I think it just makes too much sense for him to bat leadoff for the Phillies next year, which means that Kyle Schwarber will again be your leadoff hitter for the 2024 season.
I mean, I would love the lineup of it being Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos or JT Realmuto, Bryce Harper, then the other one, JT Realmuto or Nick Castellanos, Bryson Stott, Alec Bohm, or Rhys Hoskins. Like, their lineup is really good when fully healthy, but just swap Schwarber and Turner.
Yeah, it like, Turner's an OBP monster. Like, it's, like...
And a threat for steals. Like, I and just don't get why they wouldn't change that. But whatever, Phillies, you do you. Moving on to pitchers from Monday, we have the SP Roundup article, Connor Roll by Nick Pollock. We start with Mike Clevinger of the White Sox, who went 9 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 6 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Nationals. Slam dunk. I'm going to give myself a big victory lap here because I recommended him to all of you as a streamer recommendation last week for a 2-star pitcher. So for anyone who listened to me, I'm happy that he came through for you. I also listened to my own advice and streamed him in my championship match in my home league, so I'm thrilled. He has his second start of the week against the Red Sox in Fenway, and it comes on Sunday. Also, the weather might be a little bit dicey, so keep an eye on that. So you should be able to gauge if you'll need to use him on that Sunday start or not, but I'll be confidently rolling him out there if I need his start, despite the tougher matchup. Clevinger's just been really, really good. This could have been a complete game shutout as well, but with, I believe, 2 outs in the 9th, he gave up a home run to Dominic Smith. But Clev was balling. Clev was pitching so well, and I am confident in him in the Red Sox. Sure, that could blow up in your face at any point in time, but Clev has been really good recently, so I like Clevinger for the next start, and hopefully he brings us all home a championship. Next, we have Jordan Montgomery of the Rangers, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 5 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Red Sox. A golden goal for Jomont, 21 whiffs and 42% CSW for the day. Just impressive. I mean, that's a really, really great start from Jordan Montgomery, who's taking over for Max Scherzer, who's on the IL. So good job, Jomont. His curveball dominated in this one, which led to this level of success. Next, we have Freddy Peralta of the Brewers, who went 6 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 4 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts against the Cardinals. President of the Freddy Peralta and John Gray fan club here. And I'm pleased to say at least one of those fan clubs is flourishing right now, and it isn't John Gray. So, Freddy Peralta, you've had a great season. He's been incredible all year. He obviously started off really, really slow, had a tough stretch, but he's really rebounded. He looks like the guy that I was excited about 2 years ago, the year before that. I love Freddy Peralta, and I'm glad to see him back on track. And then lastly, huge shout out to Adam Wainwright of the Cardinals, who went 7 innings pitched, no earned runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts against the Brewers. This start is significant because he got his 200th career win. Congratulations, Waino. He can now retire peacefully in a Cardinals uniform, spending his whole career with the Cardinals, getting all 200 wins with the Cardinals. So, beautiful thing. I watched that whole start, and it was so cool to see. So, congratulations to you, Adam Wainwright.
Yeah, it would have sucked if he didn't actually hit 200.
Oh, 100%. That would have been such a sad way to end the season where he had not 200 wins. He retires on like 199. It would be so bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's been on 199 for what, about a month, I think, right?
Yeah, he was on 198 for like 2 months. Then he finally got one, and then I think like 3 weeks later he got his 200th.
Yeah, so yeah, it's been a tough ride for Waino. But yeah, talking about some of the other guys, obviously Jordan Montgomery. I think the problem I've had with him is that like he's really solid, but he's not an ace.
Yeah.
But you know, it's nice to see numbers like this where he goes, you know, 8 strikeouts, 21 whiffs, 42% CSW, just great numbers overall, what you love to see. But yeah, that just isn't Jarmont's game, unfortunately. And then yeah, with Clev, yeah, I'm interested to see how he does next year. Just because it's been a weird year for him. And if he is, you know, more consistent, you know, how good can he get next year? And I believe he's a free agent after this season, so you know, the team context might also matter for Clev. But yeah, I think he's proven that he's at least a really solid pitcher that you can rely on, and that's a guy who will work as an SP3, SP4 in most fantasy teams.
When he was on the Guardians, he was a great pitcher, and a lot of people forget about that. Like, he was a really, really good pitcher. He had a great season one of those years.
Prime caliber.
Yeah. Yeah, he was an ace, and a lot of people let that slip their mind. And obviously, he had a little bit of a road to work through and get a little bit better, but it looks like he found his footing. And even though he's on the White Sox and the win chances aren't going to be great, next season, if he's on a better team, I really like Clevinger because I think he's going to go under the radar, really cheap in drafts, and I think he's going to give you good length that other guys around that range can't give you. So, yeah, I'm big on Mike Clevinger. I think he's going to end the season very well, and I think that he's going to be a good value next year.
Yeah. Moving on to Tuesday's games then, thanks to Mark Stubinger for the Daily Hitting Recap article. We're starting with Austin Hayes of the Baltimore Orioles. He went 2-for-5 with 2 homers, 2 runs, and 4 RBI. Hayes is really having his best season in terms of ratios. He's slashing .281, .328, .458. So, you know, pretty decent numbers there for your run-of-the-mill outfielder. He's not at career highs for homers and RBIs, but he is getting close to those numbers. So I don't know if he's not necessarily going to surpass them in the next week, but yeah, he's been playing really, really solidly. His first homer came off Hunter Brown in the third inning, and then the second one was launched off the bat at 105 miles an hour and traveled 422 feet. With this, you know, stellar season, he is one of the top listed fielders that we put in the pitcher list top 10 list for his position. So yeah, he's been having a really good season this year. 117% WRC plus, 16 homers, and so yeah, just good numbers from Austin Hayes. Really solid, like outfielder 2 outfielder 3 sort of guy. And I don't think he's necessarily going to shoot up in drafts next year because of this performance, but at least becomes a bit more trustworthy for, you know, the person, the manager that's picking him up in the 15th round or something like that. Moving on to another outfielder, Luis Robert Jr. of the White Sox, 2-for-4, a double, a homer, 2 runs, and RBI. Robert staying healthy is probably the only bright spot in this White Sox season, just because of all the dysfunction that's happened there. He's actually been healthy. He started his 141st game yesterday, and that's the... if you need another number to be kind of amazed about, that's the first time in his career that he's had over 100 games played in a season, which I think is ridiculous.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of destroyed the pitch from Jackson Rutledge for his 37th homer of the season. Hit another hard double in later in the game, which actually was the ninth hardest hit ball of the day, 113 miles an hour. Right now, just looking at where he ranks in the American League, he's second in home runs, 13th in runs, 21st in RBI, and 15 in steals. So just a solid all-around dude. It kind of sucks that the team he's on is pretty terrible, which means he probably could have had more runs and more RBI, but at the same time, that's still pretty decent production on your own to get that for yourself.
Yeah, of course, the one season where I have literally zero shares of Luis Robert is the season that he does this. It's just so upsetting. I was so big on Luis Robert in previous years, and like you said, he's never eclipsed 100 games played, so he's been a bust every time I have shares of him. So very unfortunate, but it's really cool to see what his ceiling looks like when he's healthy, and it's a really, really good ceiling. So that's good to know. It's just all about health, which is always scary, and it's hard to project. Like, a guy's not injury prone until he is. So, is Luis Robert someone you draft confidently next season, knowing he was healthy this year? Is he someone you're hesitant on? I mean, there's so many question marks. I like Luis Robert a lot. I think he had a great season. If Shohei Ohtani didn't exist, maybe his name is in the ring for AL MVP. But overall, I just think Luis Robert's a really good fantasy player. He's going to give you over 30 homers, over 20 steals, good RBI and runs if the team is healthy and performing well, if Eloy, Tim Anderson are all living, functional baseball players. But yeah, Luis Robert is really good. And Austin Hayes, just an undervalued outfielder, one of those guys that you really don't focus on. But when you pick them up for a hot stretch or in a five outfielder league, they're kind of like your unsung hero because they don't weigh you down in any category. They're helping you in everything. So it's really cool to see outfield have a little bit of depth to it with guys like Austin Hayes.
And I think he's definitely helped by team context too. I mean, these Orioles, they're having a lot of fun this season. They've got some great guys, like we mentioned, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. Who've just been, taking the team by storm, and I think just being wrapped up in that atmosphere has been helping Austin Hayes as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree.
Moving on to the next few roundup article, Sanda Valid, from Nick Pollock. We're going to start with Blake Snell of the San Diego Padres going up against Colorado. 7 innings with no earned runs, no hits, 4 walks, and 10 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace, and potential Cy Young winners are going to, play like a Cy Young winner. And Blake Snell, it's kind of funny because he was like droppable like month two, I think, like in May and June. This was a guy that, people were like, it's probably good to sell. And yet now he's the front runner for the NL Cy Young. It almost feels inevitable, I think. The walks suck. He still has an incredibly high whip. It's not fun. But he did what he did best in this one, which was the Blake Snell blueprint. Fastballs up, curveballs down. He got 12 whiffs total on that curveball alone, which obviously helps with those 10 strikeouts. I think two more starts, and it seems like the Cy Young is his to lose. So we'll see how that goes for Blake Snell. And then Kenta Maeda of my Minnesota Twins went up against Cincinnati. 5 innings with no earned runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. All his pitchers looked solid. Splitter was good. Slider and curve were getting, a bunch of strikes. It's kind of interesting. Kenta Maeda actually this year, his slider specifically, has been getting a lot more called strikes than whiffs, which is kind of weird. Normally it's a whiff pitch, but he's been, I don't know, just maybe locating a little bit better to get some called strikes. But because of that, he's getting a lot of strikeouts because all his pitches, when they're on, they kind of wreck face of the other team. He gets Oakland on Monday, which is a great start, obviously. And so he still might be able to contribute to your fantasy team. I don't know if he's necessarily available, but a guy like Maeda, probably someone might have dropped him and just, he gets messed and thrown into the ether of available players in fantasy baseball, and you might be able to get that start to start off your championship week well.
Yeah, Blake Snell, a crazy stat is he might be the first pitcher in, I think, history or since like a ridiculously old year, like 1900s, that leads the league in ERA and walks. So that's really interesting. But I mean, Blake Snell has been dominant. Like you said, in month two, he was a droppable pitcher. He had like a 5+ ERA. He was walking everybody. He wasn't doing anything good. He was not usable for fantasy, and people dropped him. And man, in one league, someone dropped him, and I was going to pick him up, and I chose Hayden Wesneski to stream over him, and I regret it to this day. So, very unfortunate. But Blake Snell has been amazing. He's going to be the eighth, I believe I said last podcast, the eighth pitcher to win a Cy Young in both the AL and NL. So, really crazy. Joins a very exclusive list of pitchers that contains Max Scherzer and countless other guys. So, really, really cool that Blake Snell is dominating and just looks to be that ace pitcher again. And then Kenta Maeda actually has a two-start week next week. The first start is in Oakland, so that's obviously incredible, and you want to start him there. The next one is on the weekend, and it's at Coors Field. So it's a little sketchy, but I still trust it because the Rockies aren't very good. And if Maeda's stuff is on, he can battle with the best of them. I mean, he had 8 Ks in 5 innings, no earned runs, one walk, one hit in this one. I like Maeda a lot. If you need a two-star for next week and Maeda's out there, definitely roll him out there, at least for the Oakland start, because he should be good. But when that splitter and slider are on, he's almost untouchable.
And I think the important thing that he's doing it with called strikes, not necessarily whiffs. So
Yes, right.
that works on his favor actually to be in Colorado as a guy who relies on, called strikes rather than whiffs to generate a lot of strikeouts.
Yep, I agree with that. Moving on to Wednesday, September 20th, from the Daily Hitting Recap article by Jim Chatterton, we start with Corbin Carroll of the Diamondbacks. He went 4 for 5 with a home run, 3 runs, an RBI, and 2 stolen bases. He's been my favorite player to watch this season and favorite player in general because he reminds me of Ichiro, who is my favorite player of all time. A modern day Ichiro, obviously, with more power and less batting average. But he's just so fun to watch. I had tons of shares of Corbin for fantasy, tried to get him wherever I could. I wanted to put a bet down at the beginning of the season that he'd win NL Rookie of the Year, but I couldn't do it through DraftKings, so I never did it. I have to find another platform that I can make bets like that on because I would have won a lot of money. I wanted to put like $150 on Carroll to win NL Rookie of the Year, and the odds probably were pretty good because Jordan Walker was getting a lot of hype at that time. So I am really sad about that, but instead I made a bet on him to lead the league in stolen bases. And if Acuña didn't do what he did, if Acuña just didn't exist, he might have actually done it. So Corbin Carroll has been amazing. Just an unbelievable rookie season so far, who with this game officially is at 25 home runs and 50 stolen bases for the season. He's the first rookie to ever reach those numbers and the second rookie to have at least 25 homers and 40 stolen bases, the other one being Mike Trout, of course. So Corbin Carroll, incredible player. In drafts next season, John, where would you put Corbin Carroll? Because in my opinion, I think he's top five.
Ooh. Yeah, he feels like let's just say if this is a 12 teamer,
Yeah.
he's a guy I'm drafting between picks 4 and 8.
Yes. Yeah, I feel good about that range for sure.
Yeah, like obviously I think Acuña goes before him.
Obviously.
I think Judge goes before
That's a toss-up. I think Julio will go before him. I think Bobby Witt will go before him.
That's where I was thinking. Yeah, Bobby Witt's kind of an interesting player in this situation. Yeah, because yeah, to me Corbin Carroll just feels like he feels like I hesitate to call him top five, but it feels like that's kind of where at least like if you're drafting just based on ceiling, he's a top five guy
Yeah.
for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm struggling to figure out who else would be
A
going. I
healthy
mean,
Ohtani would normally go before him.
right, but obviously that's not going to happen.
Right.
Like a healthy Tatis maybe is
Yeah,
like in the same range.
that's kind of a coin flip for me. Like, would I rather more steals or more power output? And honestly, I think I'd probably lean Carroll over Tatis.
I mean, there is kind of the aspect where like steals are kind of cheap again now.
Right.
So maybe it's not as big of an advantage, but when you get, 50, that's a lot more than a guy that just goes 20, 30,
Yeah. I think you can argue Mookie Betts maybe over Corbin Carroll, but the steals aren't quite there for Mookie. I think Corbin Carroll is top five. I mean, it depends on how high you're on Fernando Tatis and Mookie Betts. Otherwise, I think Acuña Julio, Bobby Witt, and Corbin Carroll are like your top four just because they separate themselves so much in steals and they give you the power that it's just almost a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. I'm like trying to think of like other guys who like kind of been in that spot. Like, it's funny, we both haven't mentioned Joe Ram, but I don't know if Joe Ram's really a top five guy at this point.
No, I think he's a first rounder still, but I don't think he's a slam dunk first five.
Right.
And then like Trey Turner last season was going in the top five, obviously, but he fell off a bit.
Yeah. Right. Unless someone really believes.
Yeah, I mean, he turned his season around pretty heavily with that hot September, but. Mm-hmm. I still think he's more of an end of the first, beginning of the second round gamble guy.
Yeah.
But like Bo Bichette fell out of contention for a first rounder. A lot of people like Vlad has fallen out of contention. Like Freddie Freeman upped his value this year. So Freddie Freeman could be a top five guy. He's gotten 20 plus steals. I mean, pretty impressive from first base. So yeah, it's a tough call, but I think Corbin Carroll is a top five guy, hands down, especially because he's young, and if his power increases, imagine he's a 30-50 guy now, or a 35-50 guy, 40-40 guy. I mean, his ceiling is pretty high. I mean, remember, the only other rookie to do what he's done is Mike Trout, and he went on to be Mike Trout. So we'll see what Corbin Carroll does. I'm not going to call him Mike Trout, but he's looking really, really good. Next, we have Nick Castellanos of the Phillies, who went 2-for-5 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, and 3 RBI. It's been a great bounce-back season for Castellanos. The batting average and OBP are slightly higher than last season, but the true bounce-back, like JD Martinez, is in the power department. He went from a 389 slug last season to a 470 this season, which is more in line with his career norms, and he went from 13 home runs in 136 games last year to 27 in 149 this year. Castellanos is someone I root for because he has a great personality. He seems so down to earth and real. I loved what he said about Trey Turner when he was struggling. He's just a guy that's easy to root for, even though he's a Philly, and as a Mets fan, I can't really stand the Phillies, but I like Nick Castellanos, the guy and the player. I'm happy that he's playing well this season. Next, we have Willy Castro of the Twins, who went 2-for-4 with a home run, 2 runs, an RBI, and a steal. You know what Castro has been doing, obviously, since you're a Twins fan, John, but to anyone who isn't a Twins fan, Willy Castro has put up the most unknown and quietest 30 stolen base season. He's at 32 right now, along with 9 home runs, and on Yahoo, he has every eligibility, second base, third, short, and outfield. So if you need steals down the stretch, he's only 36% rostered, and with Correa and Lewis both out for now, Castro should get regular playing time, so you might want to look into Willy Castro. And then lastly, shout out to Mark Vientos of the Mets and Tyrone Taylor of the Brewers, who both hit 2 homers on Wednesday.
Yeah, fun shout out to Willy Castro, who actually like led the team in OPS for like a couple months, which was hilarious.
Wow, yeah.
But yeah, Castro's been a really solid contributor on the Twins. Obviously, getting those 30 stolen bases is nice. But yeah, that defensive flexibility really helps out, especially in, you know, those 5 outfielder, multi infielder leagues. He's so valuable in there because he can literally play every position and still provide you with, like, I'd say above average contribution to your team, especially with those 30 steals. So, yeah, we'll have to see how he does down the stretch, because like you mentioned, he's going to get very consistent play time with both Correa and Royce out.
Yeah, if he can finish the year with 10 homers, 35 stolen bases, I mean, that's a really valuable fantasy asset. That's like peak Whit Merrifield almost. So he might be a nice contributor next season if he has everyday playing time for the Twins, but we'll see on that, because obviously Willy Castro has been more of a guy that's just like a fill-in guy or a extra bat on the bench kind of dude. So it's nice to see Castro kind of coming into his own with this performance this season. Moving on to pitchers from Wednesday, from the SP Roundup article, Green on the Other Side by Nick Pollock. Before I get into this, Wednesday was the most packed pitching day of the season, in my opinion. John and I have been covering pitching performances all year, and I don't think I've seen this many noteworthy pitching performances to talk about in a single day. Anyways, we start with Hunter Green of the Reds, who went 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 14 strikeouts against your Twins. I'm sorry, John, this has got to be a sore spot because Hunter Green dominated in this one. Green slider had a 54% CSW and a 22% swinging strike rate in this one as he dominated the Twins. Nick mentioned that his pitch separation wasn't nearly as good as in his previous starts, but it didn't matter since the movement on his pitches were incredible. It will be extremely interesting to see where Green goes in drafts next season because his ceiling is astronomical, and this kind of rings a bell, obviously, as I mentioned at the start of the show, where Green is getting us excited at the end of the year because he went on a ridiculous stretch like this last season where he had a great schedule. He had like 5 starts with a sub-1 ERA, a bunch of strikeouts. He looked dominant, and he's doing the same thing to end this season. So obviously, last season, he was kind of going in the middle rounds in drafts just for the upside. I think he's going to go a little bit higher this time around because Hunter Green's ceiling is ridiculous. I mean, he had a 45% CSW in this one for the day. Just insane.
Yeah. Do you see that as like kind of a round 5, round 6 guy in a 12-teamer?
That's so tough. I think he's right on the fringe of that. I really need to see where other pitchers will be going because if he's going in the same range as Aaron Nola, I can get behind that. If he's going in the same range as, say, a Tyler Glasnow, which I don't think that's even close, but if he's going around there, I don't want to touch him. But it really depends on where he's going with proximity to other pitchers. Because I think he's worth the gamble in the 7th, 8th round. I don't think he's worth the gamble in the 5th, 6th round.
Yeah, and like you said, it also kind of depends on how everyone else shakes out, really.
Yeah, like who's going around that range, really? And yeah, is there someone more confident? Like, would you rather grab Hunter Green in your draft next season, or would you rather Jordan Montgomery?
Probably Hunter Green because of the upside.
Exactly. That's the same thing for me. And I feel like if you compare Hunter Green to someone like Tyler Glasnow, you obviously want Glasnow. Hunter Green or Christian Javier, it's pretty obvious you want Hunter Green at this very moment. So it's kind of tough to see where he goes, but I think on the upside alone, in this kind of blah pitching status we have, where there's like 8 guys that are really good, but not like ace levels like peak DeGrom, and then you have like 25 guys that are all really good, but at any given time can give up 10 earned runs. It's just like such a weird fluxation of pitching this season. It's really hard to monitor because there's no like aces. I mean, obviously there's like Gerrit Cole and Luis Castillo and Spencer Strider who have done amazing things, but just the separation between ace and like the 30th best pitcher is not too far apart.
Right, exactly. I mean, Hunter Green had 14 strikeouts in this one.
Right. So it's tough to tell, but I really like Hunter Green's upside, and I think he's going to be a strong play for next season. This start, obviously, was incredible. Next, we have Aaron Nola of the Phillies, who went 6 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, no walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Braves. You know, it took every bit of faith that I had stored deep down in my bones to start Aaron Nola in my home league championship match against the Braves, and I can happily say that it paid off. The guy I drafted with my 2nd-round pick, now, it's a keeper league, remember, so the draft values are a bit wonky with who's in the player pool and whatnot. But my 2nd-round pick finally had a great start when it mattered most, and I thank Aaron Nola for that from the bottom of my heart because he was someone that I wanted to drop about 4 weeks ago. He was just unbearable. He had like an 8 ERA in his last 4 starts. I can't believe I actually started him against the Braves, and it worked. So I can't believe it. Aaron Nola, thank you for being an ace for the 1 week. I literally needed you to be my ace, so thank you so much. Nola went more changeup and curveball heavy instead of fastball heavy in the start, and it really stifled the Braves. And another thing that Nick mentioned in that SP Roundup article is that the Braves have kind of struggled against changeups. Christopher Sanchez did the same thing, was changeup heavy and struck out 10 Braves. So we'll see if that's something the Braves have to overcome in the playoffs, because if they have a weakness to changeups, you probably should expose that, because throwing fastballs to Matt Olson and Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna Jr. and Austin Riley is not going to work. So if you could find that hole, probably take advantage of it. Now I'm going to go through these next guys pretty quickly because, like I said, this is an unbelievable day for pitching. But there was a pitching duel in Houston. It was the Astros versus the Orioles. Kyle Bradish of the Orioles went 6 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 9 strikeouts. He only threw 5 four-seam fastballs in the start and relied on the slider, sinker, and curveball. He's been fantastic all year, so Kyle Bradish, great job. Christian Javier went 5 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 11 strikeouts. He had 20 whiffs for the day on this one, a gallows pull for Christian Javier. Just his best start of the season, so another good time for that because it's the playoff time and Javier is coming through. Kevin Gausman and Michael King had another pitching duel with the Blue Jays and the Yankees, of course. Gausman of the Blue Jays went 6 innings pitched, no earned runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 10 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace in an important game against the Yankees, so shout out to Kevin Gausman. Michael King, which this is crazy, 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 5 hits, no walks, and 13 strikeouts for the Yankees. Just wow. King is throwing strikes with everything in his arsenal, the sinker, four-seamer, changeup, sweeper, everything. 40% CSW for the night, and he looks like the real deal. When he was a long reliever for the Yankees just last season, it seemed like he should have been a starter, and it's cool to see it come to fruition now because he looks really good, like Cole Reagan's level hype of really good. So Michael King, if he's still out there for any of you, take the chance on him for the final starts of the season because he is looking really good. Next, we have Reese Olson of the Tigers, who went 6 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Dodgers. He got a bit fortunate in this one. His sinker and four-seamer didn't earn a single whiff. His slider did the heavy lifting that was able to keep the Dodgers at bay, but still, a great start for Reese Olson, who's had a few good starts in a row now. So the Tigers have a sneaky good staff with Scooble, Olson, Gibson Long, Eduardo Rodriguez. I mean, that's a pretty good staff, man, for not having a solidified ace. I mean, I like that. And then two really bad performances, and one of them hits a little too close to home because I streamed Aaron Civale and it blew up in my face. But Justin Steele of the Cubs and Aaron Civale of the Rays both had 3 innings pitched, 6 earned run disasters against the Pirates and Angels respectively. Steele had 6 strikeouts though in 3 innings, and Civale had 7. So at least there was a little bit of a bright side, but two clunkers for two pretty good pitchers. One that kind of knocked himself out of the Cy Young race in Justin Steele.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, like, kind of with all the Cy Young conversations, like, crazy that Justin Steele was, like, in the number two position.
But, yeah.
Yeah, this might dump his ERA far enough where he doesn't really warrant any consideration anymore.
Yeah, I think it's easily between Spencer Strider, Blake Snell, and maybe Zach Wheeler you can throw in the fray. Zach Gallen kind of took himself out of contention with his last few starts. Justin Steele kind of took himself out of contention, but I think Wheeler's just had a really solid overall season, but not Cy Young level. Spencer Strider, obviously the strikeout numbers and all the underlying metrics, all the sabermetric stuffs, XERA and XFIP and all these other things. Spencer Strider's like leading everything. So if they go super sabermetric heavy, Spencer Strider could win, but I really think it's Blake Snell who's going to win because the overall numbers, everything, the ERA being low, I think Blake Snell is just your traditional Cy Young winner for the season.
Moving on to Thursday's games then, we're going to start with the hitters, Ozzie Albies of Atlanta, 4-for-6, 2 runs, 1 homer, and 4 RBI. I think this entire season, I've struggled to figure out how to rate Ozzie Albies. Is he the best second baseman? Is he a top 3 second baseman? Last season obviously didn't help. It felt like he was maybe drafted a little too high. Obviously, he had a really incredible 2021 season, and that probably helped with the helium in 2022, and then it didn't pan out, and then this year he did kind of drop a little bit in drafts. And that all being said, he just crossed the 100 RBI mark. He has hit 32 homers on the season. Those are numbers that resemble that 2021 season that you had, that he had. His slash line is really solid as well. In our top 10 list of second baseman in 2023 for a pitcher list, Ozzie was at number 3 behind Arias and Semien. And I think there's actually an argument that he's actually better than Semien. And part of it is like the homers. Yes, he doesn't have like the same steal numbers that he doesn't have the same steal numbers that Semien might have, I believe. But at the same time, just really good season from Albies. And then Cassidy, I know we just mentioned him, but he eclipsed the 100 RBI mark with another homer on Thursday. So good for him. And then Miguel Andujar, which is the name I was never expecting to say on this podcast ever, went 3-for-4 with 3 RBI, and that's because he's pretty much spent this entire season at AAA with the Pittsburgh organization, but he finally got a September call-up, and he's been on fire. 4 homers and 16 RBIs and 73 plate appearances. Just for, you know, small sample size fun, if you had extrapolated that to 600 plate appearances, that's a 30-homer, 120 RBI pace. Now, that's clearly not Miguel Andujar quality of production, wherever you want to say. Like, he's just never been that guy. But if you need someone that you could stream for a week, I think there's worse place to look than Miguel Andujar.
That's really funny. Yeah, literally the second to last podcast of the season mentioning Miguel Andujar was not on our bingo card for sure, but Miguel Andujar has been really good. So yeah, if you do need someone in the deeper leagues, obviously NL only or deep 15, 16, 20 team leagues, Miguel Andujar is probably someone who can help you out on the standings for the final week if he's playing at this level. So yeah, Miguel Andujar, hey, good job. Keep playing well. And for the second base debate, I'm personally going to rank them next season, I think. I'm not official on it yet, but I think for second baseman, I'm going to rank it like this. There's a top three, in my opinion, and then it kind of just falls off a cliff, really. And I'm going to go Jose Altuve 1, Ozzie Albies 2, Marcus Semien 3. And the only reason is because, obviously, Altuve got hurt this season, but Altuve's been fantastic whenever he's been healthy this year.
Right, yep.
The steals are coming back for Altuve as well, so if Altuve can go 35, 40, and 20 steals with 120 runs scored and 70, 80 RBI with a higher batting average and a higher OBP than both Semien and Albies, he's definitely my number one, especially in that Astros lineup. He's my number one. Then it goes Albies just because of lineup context. If he's batting second right in between literally Acuna, the best fantasy player, and then Riley or Olsen, he is just going to rack up counting stats. And then Semien is just the oldest of the group, and I believe in him, and I believe what he can do, but I'd rather the other two guys. And I believe in the Astros lineup, and I believe in the Braves lineup more than I do in the Rangers lineup, because the Rangers lineup has a lot of holes. They've been great this season, but will they do it again next season? I'm not sure. The Braves and the Astros constantly do it. So in team context-wise, give me Altuve first, Albies second, Semien third. But I think those are your three second baseman that you want to draft, because the other guys are just not good. They're not anywhere near the level of those three.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like Arise, for example, we already discussed, he's only a really a two category guy. So
yeah.
Moving on to pitchers, then we, you know, I just mentioned the NL Cy Young favorite. Well, the AL Cy Young favorite is Gerrit Cole. He went 8 innings with 2 hits, 1 earned run, and 9 strikeouts. And as much as I want to personally root for Sonny Gray or Pablo Lopez to win the Cy Young this season, it really feels like it's been Gerrit Cole to lose for at least a couple months at this point. Even when you don't consider this gem of a start, Cole is first in the AL in terms of innings and ERA. And while he might not be, you know, the best guy for strikeouts, he's, I believe, third right now in total strikeouts in the AL. So, whoa, okay, that's not really that bad. He still averages one an inning, which is good enough for pretty much all fantasy teams. Yes, he's had a couple blowups this season, but they haven't been as bad as other baseball players. And because of that, he still has a shockingly low ERA for a guy who it seemed like he had some troubles early on in the season. So, yeah, Gerrit Cole still dominating as usual. I fully expect him to win the AL Cy Young. A guy who's not going to be winning the NL Cy Young, but is having an okay season, is Wade Miley of the Brewers. He went 6 innings with 3 hits, no earned runs, and 7 strikeouts today. Yeah, leave it for Wade Miley to finally be hitting his stride as Milwaukee tries to solidify their grip atop the NL Central. His season has been up and down. He'll have some absolute gems, followed by another game where he, you know, throws 5 innings with giving up 4 runs, and it's just, you know, not great for the team. But that all being said, he's only had one start this season where he's like actually blown up and given up an excessive number of runs. Other than that, like, he's been pretty consistent, not necessarily always getting quality starts, but he's at least, you know, going 5 innings and just not getting shellacked by the other team offensively. So that's led him to put top 40 numbers in terms of ERA and WHIP, which is pretty solid for Wade Miley. He's not necessarily a guy that obviously you want to be having on your fantasy roster, but you know, he's worth a stream or a look at if the matchup is good.
Yeah, Gerrit Cole is most likely going to win the first Cy Young of his career, and rightfully so. I mean, he's been so good this season, like you mentioned. 192 innings pitched, 208 strikeouts, 2.81 ERA, and a 1.05 WHIP. I mean, that's just incredible, and I don't even think that counts the stats that he just had. So really ridiculous. He's at 200 innings now with 217 strikeouts. I mean, fantastic. The strikeouts are a little bit down. He had 257 last season in 200 innings pitched. So obviously that's down a bit, but a sub 3 ERA, a sub 1 WHIP, or right around a 1 WHIP in this climate, in the way the pitching has been this season, he is clearly the Cy Young winner. I mean, I'm very happy for him. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's hard to give it to someone else, basically.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. And one final note from Thursday. Ronald Acuña Jr. stole his 68th base in the game on Thursday. And that just leads me to mention that Ronald Acuña is currently at 39 homers, 68 stolen bases, with 140 runs scored and 100 RBI. This might be one of the best fantasy baseball seasons we have ever seen. I mean, he realistically could go 40-70. He needs one home run and two steals in the next 9 to 10 games, which I'm sure he's going to press himself to do, because 40-70 is just something that you never see. I mean, John, in your time of playing fantasy, has there ever been a season like this where you just remember was just so much better than every other player in fantasy? Like, I was playing when Albert Pujols had 47 homers in 2009, scored 124 runs at 135 RBI, batted 327. Like, I remember that season. I remember Miguel Cabrera winning the Triple Crown one year in 2012, yeah. I believe. 44 homers, 139 RBI, 330 batting average. Obviously, Mike Trout that same year in his rookie year, 30 homers, 49 steals. Even Corbin Carroll right now, 25 homers, 50 steals. These are some of the best fantasy seasons ever, and Ronald Acuña's might be the best, unless you were playing when, like, Barry Bonds at 73 homers.
Right, yeah. I would say the, I mean, I wasn't playing fantasy, but the season that comes to mind that it's not close because of the steals that Acuña has, but yeah, Miggy's Triple Crown season for sure.
Yeah.
Was just one for the ages, and that kind of dominance is being mirrored by Acuña here. He's just, you know, instead of necessarily the steals, instead of necessarily providing all the power that Miggy had, and obviously we're not knocking Acuña's power at all. He's clearly, kicking the crap out of the ball. He has the speed, which is insane. Like that's just the extra element that Miggy never had. So, I think that it's got to be a top three season. Yeah, Barry maybe hitting 73 is kind of ridiculous because that OBP that year was also nuts.
Yep.
It's hard to argue that there has not been a better fantasy season than what Ronald Acuña Jr. is putting up right now.
Yeah, 40-70 with 140 runs scored, 100 RBI, a 416 OBP. He's batting over 300. I mean, come on. This is a ridiculous video game number fantasy season. Like, I don't think people have fully appreciated what Ronald Acuña Jr. has done this season, because this is one that you'll look back on and be like, yeah, I played against him in fantasy and I survived. Like, I can't believe the season that he had, because that's astronomical. And hey, just a real thing, you were slighting Miggy for never having speed in his game. He had a career high 9 steals in 2006. So watch your mouth with Miguel Cabrera, speed demon. He had 40 career steals in 21 years.
It reminds me of there was that play this year, right, where it was Rich Hill versus Miggy.
Yeah, yep.
And I think like Miggy hit a dribbler or something.
Yep.
And it was like a race between Rich Hill running from the mound to first base and Miggy getting from a home plate to first. And I was just like, man, this is feels like a little bit like torture.
Yeah, Miggy's legs are a little bit heavier nowadays. And it's pretty crazy to think that Acuña this season has nearly doubled Miguel Cabrera's career stolen bases. He's gotten 40 steals in his career, 21 years. Acuña's got nearly 70 steals this season. So yeah, pretty remarkable.
It's kind of stupid.
Yeah, I had to mention Acuña because, I mean, it's just something that I think a lot of people don't realize or just don't fully appreciate, because 40-70, man, come on, that's insane. But now we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll give you all some pitcher and hitter streamers for the week ahead. We'll be back after this. Okay, we are back, and it's time to send you off with some hitter and pitcher streamers. John, what pitcher streamers do you have for us to wrap this season up, really? There's no more recommendations after this week.
Yeah, that's true. Two of the pitchers we already talked about, going to just knock them off. Sawyer Gibson Long, Detroit. He's going up against Oakland. That just seems too easy to pick. But then he gets Kansas City next Thursday, so yeah, I think that's definitely a guy that you should be targeting. Wade Miley, he just handled St. Louis. That was today's start. And he gets them again next week. So I think that should be pretty solid. St. Louis has nothing to play for. And Milwaukee does. So I think that's going to be another good start for Wade. And then my other pick is Ken Waldichuk. He's facing off against Minnesota. He's a lefty. And the reason why that's big is because obviously Carlos Correa and Royce Lewis are righties. And so the Twins are going to be missing two of their, you know, primary sources of offense against lefty pitching. And so if you're looking for kind of a risky stream, I think Waldichuk is in line for that, especially because Minnesota probably will have clinched the Central by then, and they're just going to have nothing to play for, and so they're not going to, you know, necessarily spring out their best on offense, especially against a team like Oakland. Like, they're just not going to care too much. So I think that's a nice sneaky opportunity for maybe a win or a solid game in terms of strikeouts from Ken Waldichuk there.
Yeah, I like all of these recommendations. Sawyer, Gibson, Long obviously being my favorite. I mean, the matchups, Oakland and then Kansas City, you can't get more of a softball matchup list than that. So to end the season, I really like Sawyer, Gibson, Long. This is, though, kind of gives me the feels, which is also why I'm hesitant to stream Sawyer, Gibson, Long, even though Tarik Skubal, who we didn't mention, also torched it up on Thursday against the Athletics, going 7 innings, no earned runs, 10 strikeouts. So I just feel like this is a trap, because Sawyer, Gibson, Long has been great. And kind of like with Cutter Crawford in that two-start week we mentioned that one time, and I was like, this kind of feels like a trap, but obviously it's a good start, so just go for it. He stunk. And this kind of feels like a trap as well, but Sawyer, Gibson, Long has been really good. If you need a start, there's really none better than a guy with a lot of upside against two horrible teams. So Sawyer, Gibson, Long, easily my favorite. Wade Miley against the Cardinals again. The Cardinals look like they really don't care anymore. And obviously they've been eliminated from the postseason. But crazy stat, John. I don't know if you knew this, but I know this because I roster Nolan Arenado on one of my teams. Mm-hmm. He hasn't hit a home run since August 19th. That's a month and 3 days.
Jeez, wow.
He has not hit one home run in that time. So really not helpful for my fantasy teams. I'm not happy with you, Nolan. But they just really look like they're not playing with the same conviction you would see a team try to play with. So I really like the Wade Miley stream. He did really well on Thursday, and I think he can pitch really well again since they're running out people that just don't care or trying new people. And yeah, it's not good for the Cardinals, but Wade Miley, great stream there. And Ken Waldichuk, yeah, just a good matchup. The Twins strike out a lot, if anything, so at least you can get some strikeouts from Ken Waldichuk. And like you said, their two primary right-handed power bats are out of the lineup, so you might as well take advantage of that. Now for the hitter streamers, I just have four names, quickly mention them all. First, Ryan O'Hearn of the Orioles. He's 35% rostered. He has first base and outfield eligibility. He hits right-handed pitching really well. He's been batting cleanup for the Orioles, and they face mostly right-handed pitching from here on out. At least the rest of this week, they face right-handed pitching. I'm personally crossing my fingers and hoping he doesn't play well this week, because in my championship match, my opponent just picked him up. So I reluctantly recommend him because I think he's a good option, but I just don't want him to perform good against me. But if you need a bat that is batting in the middle of a great lineup, Ryan O'Hearn is that. Mark Canha of the Brewers, who I think is the real steal to grab here, 46% rostered, first base and outfield eligibility. All these roster ships are on Yahoo, by the way. In 16 games in September, Canha has a 373, 448, 559 slash line with 3 home runs, 12 RBI, and 4 steals. That's a 1,007 OPS. Since Canha's been traded from the Mets to the Brewers, he has been really, really good. He's batting in the 1-hole, the 3-hole, and the 4-hole quite regularly, so I really like Mark Canha for the rest of the season. He's an on-base machine. His power's coming around right now. He's getting some steals. Mark Canha is a sneaky, good, hot bat to pick up for the rest of the season. Then we have Willy Castro, who I mentioned before, 36% roster on Yahoo, all the eligibility, second, third, short, and outfield. If you need steals, that's your guy. He's probably the only guy on the wire who will give you that good of steal production. And then lastly, Mark Vientos of the Mets. He's the least rostered of the bunch, 3% rostered. He only has third base eligibility, but he has sneaky power. He hit 2 home runs on Wednesday, another homer on Thursday. He's getting everyday playing time in the Mets lineup now since they traded everyone away. There's been injuries. So Vientos is playing every day, and he's hitting homers pretty much every day right now. So if you need a sneaky power option, Mark Vientos is a good shout.
Yeah, I think of those guys, O'Hearn's been really solid. this entire season.
Yeah.
But yeah, that can of slash line's actually kind of insane. I didn't realize he was doing that well with the Brewers. MVP level production, and the fourth steals is nice too. That's not really necessarily always something you expect from Canna, so cool to see there. And I mean, my thoughts on Castro are well known. I think he's a really good steals guy. And then yeah, Vientos, I've been following him because he's on my dynasty team. He kind of wasn't great earlier this season when he was called up and then just inconsistent, you know, playing time for Buck, just classic Mets. But yeah, if he's, you know, feeling it, getting a hot streak, then yeah, that's definitely worth a pickup if you need that type of production.
Yeah, Mark Canna has been really, really good for the Brewers. I mean, 373 batting average in 16 games. It's pretty hot. So I think Mark Canna is the best of this bunch. I would say Canna, then O'Hearn, then Vientos, and Castro is mainly if you need power. Vientos, if you need steals, Willie Castro. So that's the list. Yep. Those are the streamer recommendations for the week and the last of the season, because next week we're going to recap the end of the season pretty much. So there's no recommendations to give, just victory laps hopefully to take. Hopefully I have won my home league championship final. That would be great. I'll share the trophy with all of you on the final week if I do win. But that wraps up this episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Before you go, make sure you follow us on Twitter or X at ThisWeekPL. Also, send us your comments and questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find John on Twitter or X at TheJohnKe. That's THEJOHNKE. You can follow myself on Twitter or X at Regicidal. That's REGICIDAL. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcher List podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts on. And please, once again, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We will be back next week with the final episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball, talking about a whole lot of stuff. You won't want to miss it. For John, I'm Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.